If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome back to the Nerd Nest Podcast, everybody. It has been a really long time since we did a live version of the show. So for all of you that are here for the live show, thank you so much for tuning in. If you don't know about the live show, then you can always subscribe to youtube.com/nerdnest and click on that little bell. And if you see a live show, then you know that we're recording the show live. I'm joined today by Rich. Hey, Rich, what's up, man?
Much, man. How are you doing? I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's good to see you. I'm excited to talk about this stuff. This is our last show for 2 weeks because I'm going to PAX, but I'm excited to talk. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Jimmy, you were playing Helldivers right before we tuned in.
I was on a call with a lawyer. What? I was like, right, shut up. And I was playing Helldivers. But yeah, that game is still very good. I didn't get a chance to try out the mechs or anything, or any of the new Warbond stuff. So I just was like, I got like an hour. I'll try and get some in. And still a great game, you know? Still
fun. It is. And we'll talk more about the games that we've been playing later on in the episode. But we want to start with the news that we are still waiting. I was talking to Rich yesterday. And I was trying to think about what are we going to talk about on the podcast tomorrow. I got some stories, but what do I want to start with? And he held up his Legion Go and said, "I'm making a change here." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And we'll talk about that change that he's making in just a second. But we're still waiting for SteamOS. Like SteamOS, Valve said, "Geez, I don't even know how long ago." Like here, I'm looking at an interview from November 10th last year. This is the most recent time that they've said something like this. But basically, they were talking to PC Gamer, and they were like, "So when are we going to get SteamOS 3. whatever outside of the Steam Deck?" And Lawrence Yagg said, "Oh man, it's very high on our list. It's on our list, and we are working on it. But a lot of the same people that would make general install of SteamOS available are the same people that were working on Galileo, which they were making the Steam Deck OLED work. We're hoping soon. It's very high on our list. We want to make SteamOS more widely available. We'll probably start with making it available on other handhelds with similar gamepad style controller. And then further beyond that to more arbitrary devices. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, driver support and making sure that it can work on whatever PC it happens to land on. Because right now it is very, very tuned for Steam Deck." And oh, I just realized that my friends are not here in the picture. But I'm gonna fix that right now while Rich jumps in and tells us what's your reaction to reading that?
Yeah, so I definitely remember seeing that when that interview happened, right? And thankfully, I had some relief that they were at least saying, kind of reaffirming that they want to do this. But at the same time, I had already given hope. And I continue to not have hope for this to happen. I think eventually they'll do it, but it doesn't seem like it's a priority to them. And that quote or that mention of the fact that those people were the same people that were working on the Steam Deck OLED, I feel like that can apply to anything else that they're going to work on, right? So like if they're now working on the Steam Deck 2, then that question kind of still arises, right? Like, are they going to work on Steam Deck or SteamOS 3.0, or are they just going to continue working on Steam Deck 2 or whatever the next handheld is? So it just doesn't seem like it's high on their list of priorities. So that's why I'm happy that there are community efforts that are kind of pushing that along.
And what do you think about that, Jimmy? While I try and make Rich not a giant person on the video, I don't know what happened.
I talked about it in the video I recorded today, which will go up sometime this week. But I was like, my thought was it was taking so long, maybe because they want to make sure they get the biggest, you know, group of people as possible when they launch it. But then I just, after you read what you just said, it seems like they're obviously targeting the ROG ally, maybe the Legion Go, maybe whatever INEA is working on. I just hope it's like not too long after it comes out that it'll work with NVIDIA cards, because that's obviously the problem you run into with a lot of the other fan-made OSs. I have like a 2 terabyte SSD that's in my like laptop's extra SSD bay that's like ready to go, so I can dual boot SteamOS, because I'm obviously really interested in it because the stuttering issues that SteamOS fixes, I just don't want to deal with stuttering anymore. So I hope it doesn't take too long, but it's weird that they keep dropping hints about it and then moving people over to like work on the next hardware thing. I get that there's probably a smaller team working on all this stuff, but like maybe hire more people to work on one thing at once instead of kind of just like bouncing all over the place. Maybe that's the philosophy, because it gets to a point where it's like, if you're not going to release it, stop talking about it. You know, like they're the ones that are kind of putting the they're putting the information out there, so people are getting excited for a real thing. It's not like rumors or speculation or anything. It's like, if you're going to announce it, which they did when the Steam Deck was even announced in the first place, it's like, get moving on it. Let's go. Let's get this out there.
That's it.
Yeah, and I do like the idea. Like, if they're not going to, I do still think that it is a priority for them, and I do think that they are still going to do it. That's one thing where I think Rich and I disagree. Like, he says if it was really a priority, they would have done it by now. But I feel like once you install SteamOS on a device, it makes it so much more frictionless to use Valve's store. And so there's so much of a motivation, just a financial motivation, that it makes it in Valve's best interest to get that on other hardware, especially just random ass PCs, like the one that I got sitting over under my TV over here. Like, it if I had that on there, I feel like I would go into that store more often. Instead of when I sit down and there, I have to get out a keyboard and get out a mouse and click like 7 things before it goes into big picture mode. And then sometimes when I start a game, it doesn't work the way that I wanted it to. None of that stuff happens when you are on a Steam Deck. It just works. And I think that's something that a lot of people want. They want that, what's it called? A 12-foot interface or a 10-foot interface?
Right.
Yeah. They want that on their TVs. And that's one of the things that I think that Valve is going to bring eventually. We did get a comment from Mick in our live chat. He said, SteamOS is what sets Steam Deck apart from other devices. They should not make it available for other hardware. If people want SteamOS, buy a Steam product. I don't personally agree with that, because Valve wins when you use their store. Right. Valve doesn't. SteamOS is not the loss leader in order to get somebody to buy Valve's hardware. Valve's hardware is the loss leader to get people into their store. At least that's my opinion. What do you think about that, Rich? Do you think that they should just stick to, you know, make other people use it on Steam and only SteamOS or Steam Deck?
I definitely want them to make SteamOS general use. So I definitely don't agree with that. But also, there's what is going on?
I don't know, man.
It's the rustiness of going live.
Yeah.
So there's that. But also, I think that, like, you know, at this point, Valve has said it, right? It'd be different if Valve didn't say it, but they've said it. They've reaffirmed it. This is their direction. They want to make it generally available. So if they want to make it, who am I to question them, right? Like, that's what they said.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to mention, there was another comment from Chaos Fan Law about what did it say? So, can't get Hollow ISO. Are there any alternatives? So yeah, we are going to talk about some alternatives.
Well, talk about it right now. That's a perfect transition. Go ahead.
Okay. So Bazite just released their 2.4. Their 2.4 release, and here it is on the Lenovo Legion Go. And cool. Yeah, it's working. It's working well. So, I mean, I've run into a few issues. Like, for some reason, when I first launch a game, it'll go into like a black screen and I have to like suspend and resume. And that's really janky, but that's the jankiest thing I've seen so far. And it's still like, these are still early days for Bazite. So I suspect that they'll fix that. But it was an easy install. I can give you, Bill, I can give you a link to a guide so you can put it in the show notes. But it was a pretty easy install, and now I'm playing SteamOS on the Legion Go. And I know people don't like using SteamOS for like stuff that's a Bazite, Chimera, that's not actual SteamOS. But I think at this point, like, this is the closest thing we've got, because it's booting me right into big picture mode, or into game mode, really. I got the performance overlay. I've got TDP controls. I've got all that good stuff. So it's working for me. And I think if people want that SteamOS experience on the ROG Ally or the Legion Go, this is a good way to go.
When you have that up and running, if Valve releases like a Steam client upgrade for like SteamOS, can you do it through the like actual interface on the Legion Go, or do you have to like then go wait for them to like patch Bazite and then?
Yeah,
I think it worked fine on the Next Light once I got Chimera OS up and running, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I was like, because they released a lot of updates lately, I noticed.
Yeah, so I didn't double check that, but it should, because so I'm gonna go into beta now. Yeah, the client updates absolutely should. All the actual deck updates, they'll have to you know, mirror that in there, in what they're doing, but the client updates absolutely should. So I just opted into beta and it's restarting now, so I'll see what it does.
We find out later on this episode.
Yeah, we're gonna find out.
Look at that retention writing in on the fly.
I installed this 2 days ago, 2 to 3 days ago. And then there was the client update beta yesterday. So there should be a new beta for me.
Does it work with NVIDIA? It looks like on the Reddit.
I haven't tested it on NVIDIA, but that is the question.
Right? Like, I'll try it out, right? Like,
yeah.
That's how bad I want it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a lot of people mentioned that too. You mentioned it, and a lot of people mentioned in the comments that maybe Valve just wants to have like the perfect release where everything is compatible. To be honest, I think that's impossible. So, like,
right. Yeah, they'd have to just use the Steam hardware survey, right? Like, just go for the top, you know, percentile of cards.
Well, yeah. they've said is that they're going to release it on specific hardware first. So I would assume that we'll see an image that is specifically made for the ROG Ally, and then we'll see an image that is specifically made for the Legion Go, and then the MSI Claw.
Do you think that like Microsoft being part of the marketing for those handhelds, that just makes it so that like Valve couldn't work with those manufacturers?
I don't know enough about like driver support to answer that question. Like that's outside my wheelhouse. But what I would say is, unless they need those companies to get driver support, I mean, let's just assume that you bought a laptop and that laptop had the Z1 Extreme chip in it. Like, would they need anybody to help them get driver's support for that? Because that's like all that those devices are.
You can seek it out yourself too, right? Like,
You could.
Maybe. I don't want to like act like I know. I'm genuinely asking questions. But like,
no, you definitely could.
It would be so cool, because I'm going back to that question about you know, whether they should keep it exclusive or not. I don't think they really have much of a reason to, because if you go way back to when they did SteamOS 2, or whatever it's called, when they released it, they said they wanted it to kind of, you know, take a little bit of the market share away from Windows, to kind of either A, you know, encourage Microsoft to actually, you know, orient that operating system for gaming more, B, you know, give more competition in the field, which is always good. So I'm sure the philosophy's changed in like a decade, but that's still got to be at least some sort of a driving factor for them at some point, I would think.
It's all Richard all the time.
I love this. I like that. Big Rich.
Yeah.
Figured it out. okay. So
Emilio asked what I was getting at. He said, you mean like ROG Ally or Legion Go has a contractual obligation to not support SteamOS? And that is what I was getting at. Do you think that like they're not allowed somehow?
I think if either of those devices were more successful, I think that'd be a bigger problem. But it's not like, you know, like, they're probably, they have a good reason to come back to Microsoft and be like, look, like we need to do something. The ROG Ally is on sale for like $400 right now. I was in Best Buy last weekend and there's more open box ROG Allies on the shelf than new ones in that little glass display case. So there's clearly like issues they need to solve there with getting it into people's hands. So it's kind of like what Sony's doing with the PSVR 2, where they're like, yeah, we're going to make it work on PC just to give any incentive to pick one of these things up, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the PSVR 2 later on in the episode as well.
I can confirm. So this is not yesterday's beta, but this is the March 12th beta. So
that's awesome.
It's updating to last week's beta.
Cool.
And after that's that, really it should cool. update to today's.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Ryan in chat says, I mean, you can boot into big picture mode already on Ally. It's great and very good for the store and all that. Not sure what would make me want to lose all my extra Windows functionality for SteamOS. I totally right. get what you're saying there, Ryan. For me, though, I'm using Windows on a big computer that's underneath my TV. And every time that Windows does something where like there's some stupid pop-up that I can't get rid of with my controller or like something like that, I have to come over here, grab a Bluetooth keyboard or bring my mouse over and so that I can close that kind of thing. Like that's the kind of stuff that is constantly Windows getting in its own way. If that kind of stuff never happened, I wouldn't care. I'd be like SteamOS, Windows, I don't care. It's all the same to me. It's just a way to launch my games. But as soon as I don't have a controller attached, Windows just turns into a nightmare. And yes, it boot like that system boots into big picture mode. But I still need a keyboard and mouse all the time just to deal with weird nonsense that just happens because Windows is legacy and weird and old and, you know, not that old is bad. I'm an old man.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right.
And there's nothing wrong with preferring Windows, right? Like if that's what you prefer and that matches the games you're playing, then that makes sense. For me, I happen to prefer SteamOS, and like I'm mostly playing like 2D action platformers, card builders. Like I'm playing games that just, it doesn't matter what OS I play them on, and it just, for me, I enjoy the same kind of experiences you were saying, Bill. I just enjoy the sort of no fuss that you get with SteamOS.
I would dual boot it on every device. Like the Steam Deck, when they announced it that they would also launch dual booting alongside SteamOS for PC.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Like I would just have both. Because then when you want to sit at your desk, use Discord, have a browser up watching TV shows, like obviously Windows is better suited for that. Or if you just want the like no frills console style gaming experience, like plugging your PC or laptop into your TV, just boot up your other partition, you know, like, and the ROG Ally is upgradable. So you could just put a 2 terabyte in it and split it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, you know, whenever SteamOS does come to other platforms, I will say one thing that we know for sure, 1,000%, it's going to come to the Steam Deck 2. And when that Steam Deck 2 launches, Rich, you posted this over on your channel, this poll. You want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah. So I asked, and this was inspired by a conversation that was happening in the like forums of gamingonlinux.com. So the question I had was, what do you think is the ceiling for units sold if Valve could manage a worldwide and retail release of the Steam Deck 2? And the options I gave were 0 to 5, you can see them on screen, 0 to 5 million units, 5 to 10 million units, 11 to 30, 31 to 50, or 50 plus. And I'm surprised there were a lot of people. How many is that there? 32% of people that said 11 to 30 and 8%.
Which you can tell because this is my account. You can tell where I voted.
Yep. 8%, 31 to 50, 13%, 50 plus million units. Like, that's insane. That 13, I don't think they're wrong necessarily. I'm just saying I wouldn't have expected that a year ago for people to say that Steam Deck 2 is capable of selling 50 plus million units.
I think they're absolutely wrong. Like, if you asked what I thought about this before the show, and I said, well, I need a time frame. So like one thing that this happens to me every time I run a poll, I don't think of everything. And then instantaneously somebody's like, well, what about this? And I'm like, oh yeah, of course. So there's no time frame here. So how long are you thinking anyway? Like, how many years to get to these numbers?
So I think that was a good question that you asked when it came up, because like, it's not exactly a console in that way. So like, my best guess would be like 5 years.
Okay. So it took the PS5, 4 years to sell roughly 50 million units. Am I right about that, Jimmy?
Yep. I'm on the Wikipedia right now, because it's like, you look at it, it's a lot of handhelds up here. They're all Nintendo, but like,
yeah,
there's obviously people who want handhelds.
Oh, absolutely.
Like us three.
Well, I think that 50 million is a crazy amount. And I think 10 to 30 million, if they launch it worldwide, like you said, I think that that's easy. 31 to 50, I think that's harder, but doable. 50 million, I think, is almost impossible until we get to Steam Deck 3 or Steam Deck 4 or whatever. You know what I mean? After they have just a little bit more mainstream. Because while, like, us and the people who watch our YouTube channels or whatever, like, we're all like, yeah, Steam Deck is awesome. If I can count on one hand the number of people that I have met in real life that have a Steam Deck that's not me. One of them is my son, and the other one is my barber. Don't make comments. I have a beard, okay? But two people, that's it. I don't know anybody else in real life that owns a Steam Deck. Nobody.
People in my circle, I actually know a lot of people, mainly because of, I guess, my job. Like, I know Ray has one, the guy who does Xbox Ready. My friend, two of my friends around here in Detroit have them. My friend Grayson in North Carolina's got one. It's mostly YouTuber people, though, who I think have them. But imagine if Valve released a killer app style game, though, like, you know, Counter-Strike, Left 4 Dead, Half-Life, all of those are playable on the Steam Deck, but they're not built for the Steam Deck. If Valve actually released a game that they made with a controller interface in mind, or like that can run well on the Steam Deck, I feel like that's where you start bumping the numbers up, because you create the Nintendo situation where it's like, well, I could spend $1,000 to $2,000 right now and build a PC. I could buy a monitor. I could buy a keyboard. I could buy like a nice pair of headphones, a mouse, all that stuff. Or, you know, the Steam Deck sitting right there, entry level price, $399. I know this like killer app type of game I want to play runs well on it. Why not just grab one of those? Right. Like, I feel like Valve is kind of, you know, missing a critical piece here, which is remembering that they're a game company, you know.
I would agree that it would definitely help. But Valve has said they don't want to make like a Steam Deck exclusive, because they just want to make PC games. I would.
Yeah, so that's where I think 50 million is like a little high. I think you're right there. But like,
yeah,
I feel like that would juice it quite a bit.
I think so. I would love to see Aperture Desk Job fleshed out into a full game, because that was really fun and it used every single part of the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it has to be like Steam Deck exclusive, but something that you can, even if it's just PC exclusive, but either way, right? Like Elden Ring felt like, and you said it in your video, Bill, but it felt like a killer app for the Steam Deck.
Oh, yeah.
And if they can keep doing that, like, I don't know why, if they weren't to have, if they were to have a retail worldwide release, I don't see why they wouldn't put money towards marketing and, you know, market those as killer apps on the Steam Deck too. So have whatever the next From Software game is, like, time their release such that they can actually do that and market.
Do those Valve skins, right? Like what they did with Death Stranding, where you get the like Gordon Freeman armor, just like little things like that to let people know that they're a player. And the timing couldn't be better, right? Like Microsoft's handheld that they're allegedly working on, it's not out. They're just kind of in disaster mode right now. Sony has the portal, but the whole goal with that is to play PS5 games, like stream to it. If their handheld's actually real, it's coming out in what, like 2, 3, 4 years? Like Valve can kind of clean up. And yeah, Elden Ring, that's the game that kind of makes me want to have SteamOS on my PC, just because the PC version of that game is still plagued with stuttering. It's plagued with frame drops. And while you run it at lower settings on the Steam Deck, like, you still arguably get the best experience that way, or playing the PS4 version on PS5. Like that's your two best bets.
You know, you talk about skins. Why is Valve not capitalizing on working with game companies so that when a game comes out on PC, it has like they sell, like Nintendo does this all the time. You know how many people have bought multiple Nintendo Switches just because it has a new design on the dock or the Joy-Cons? Like Valve could say, all right, guess what? We're partnering with Elden Ring DLC, and we've got this amazing Elden Ring themed Steam Deck that's only available during the pre-order of this. And it comes with, you know, you buy it for however much Steam Deck costs, which is, you know, because there's different tiers, plus $60, so you're basically getting like a $10 discount, because you know the game costs $70 or however much it costs, $10 cheaper, and you get this combo bundle, and like that's a bunch of extra bump to marketing for this new game, and it sells a bunch of Steam Decks because people are like, well, they're partnering with these guys, it must run on there, so I'm gonna buy it. And people would buy that because people bought the translucent one.
Okay. Are you kidding me? That I was like, that's the most mad I've ever been that day that it came out. And it's like, you know, in stock, out of stock. Then it's telling me I tried too many times to purchase, so I make a new Steam account.
It was so bad.
It was so annoying. But you're so right. Like people would show up for that stuff. And that gets the hardware out there. That gets people buying games on Steam. Like that's the ultimate goal at the end of the day.
You know what else gets people buying games on Steam is when you can buy them and then share them with your family, because Valve just announced yesterday Steam Families. I have to make a quick correction because I screwed up when I was making my video. I was sitting there. We had just finished eating dinner. I got a message from somebody that said, Bill, did you see this? And I looked at it. And I immediately sent a message to our little Discord channel. I was like, guys, and I pasted, and then I ran upstairs and I sat down and I recorded a video, like a live reaction to reading it, because I knew that it was huge news. And I screwed up in one part of my video where I said that you had to be online. You do not have to be online. In the FAQ, it says, I'm trying to find it. Do I need to be online to play my shared games? Let's see if I can put this on the screen. And it says, you can play games from family library offline as long as that game supports family sharing, which is huge. But honestly, I don't think that that's the hugest part. The hugest part is the fact that you can share these games and it's not an all or nothing thing. Rich, you want to talk about this real quick?
Yeah, so previously it would lock the entire library. So I have a library of like 1,000 games, and I share my library with my son who has like 2 games, right? And so if my son wanted to play something, let's say he was playing Spelunky 2, then I would now no longer have access to my library of games at all. So I would go.
Yeah, your whole library.
My whole library of games. So I would go into offline mode so that now I can play Spelunky 1. And now we're both playing at the same time. But now with Steam Families, it just does a per game lock. So now I wouldn't be able, if he's playing Spelunky 2, I'm not going to be able to play Spelunky 2 at the same time, but we can both be online and I can play something else. And the detail that I thought was really cool was what you told me with multiple copies. So if you have six people in your family and two people in your family have a copy of Balatro, well, two members of your family, any two members, can be playing Balatro. It doesn't matter who it is, and you can all play now. Or you won't lock anybody else out of the other games.
Yeah, that's so good. And I think that, like, that's, this change is absolutely massive. After I came up and did my video, I turned it on. I texted my son, who was in his room. I was like, I sent him a link so he wouldn't see how to do it. I was like, do this. And then he went through and did it. And then he came upstairs and he sat down on the couch with me. And we just started looking through my Steam library and saying, oh, okay, now I got this. Like, some of his games that I didn't have before, now I have. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, look, I got this game now. And you got this game now. And he's like, oh, I'm going to play Crisis Core. And so we were going through the list and just looking at all the games that we suddenly have to buy multiple copies of. There was one game, I can't remember what it was. And he was like, oh, I'm glad I didn't buy that. Because now he can just play my version of it. This is super consumer friendly, and I think it's a win for Valve. Jimmy, what do you probably just put out your video about it, right?
I just recorded it. I edited it right before this. I think it's awesome, right? Like, I don't have anyone to share with. I don't really care, but like, it's cool for having kids or like a roommate situation. Like when I was living with like my friends in college, that would have been so awesome if when GTA 5 came out, we could have just bought one copy and shared it between the three of us instead of, you know, all buying three $60 copies, especially when we're short on money. There's so many like tricky ways you could, you know, all pay for one copy on one account or X, Y, or Z. I think that's awesome. The one thing that I wanted to check is if it allows you now, I don't know why this feature would activate this, but like when I'm playing Helldivers on my PC, when I'm waiting for everyone to like pick their loadout or like, you know, do all the stuff in between matches, I've been picking up my Steam Deck and just knocking stuff out in Expeditions Mudrunner. And then it gives you that, unless you're in offline mode, when you boot the game up, it gives you that warning that's like, hey, you're already playing a game on another computer. I would love if they allowed you to, if they had some way to know that like you're playing a game on your main PC, logged in the same account on your Steam Deck, playing a different game. Like, if they're being this consumer friendly with the family thing, I would love if they extended it to that, because it's just one extra annoying step to have to put my Steam Deck in offline mode to play a game that has no online features. But, you know,
like,
that's a really good point.
Someone asked about playing like an idle game on their desktop while they're playing something else. You know what I mean? Yeah. So similar use case. And I could see that, you know, like there are definitely people that are going to two screen it. So, and it doesn't, in that scenario, it doesn't hurt, right, for Valve to enable something like that. Of course, there will always be people that are going to find some way to abuse, but that one seems relatively, like, modest.
Not only that, but it's super easy to get around. Like you said, you just put it into offline mode, so it's not like having this as a restriction is actually stopping anything. And even if you couldn't put it in offline mode, you could just make a second account and share it with that account, like a second family account, so that you could do that. But then the achievements and the saves would be separated, and that's not really a good solution, but you could still play it that way. And if that's the case, then the restriction isn't really useful in any way. So they should just get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Someone mentioned offline mode breaks achievement timestamps. That is a big deal for a lot of people. I personally don't happen to care too much about achievements, so it pops when it pops. But I know a lot of people take that seriously. So,
You think that's bad? the PlayStation people, the trophy hunters, are like crazy. Yeah. They get mad when, like, if you pause a game, and there's like an in-game timer in this game. I forget what game it was on Sacred Symbols. I was listening to it. Colin was talking about it. And it's like, when you pause the game, the timer will run for 3 more minutes. And that throws off your game time. So he would reload a save once he unpaused the game to revert it back. Because it's like, you want to make sure that the game clock is on par for some reason. Yeah, I don't really get it, but I get it. You know, like, whatever, you do you. Like, if it's that, if that's important to you, I understand.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are a lot of people that that's important to, so they should fix that.
Yeah.
All right. Before we move on to this story about the Playtron, we did just get a super chat come in. If you guys want to make sure that you're part of the show, you can use the super chat feature on YouTube, and we will squeeze you in between the topics that we are pre-planned. He sent a $10 super chat. Thank you so much. He said, "This is very good news, but the skeptic in me is making me ask, the magician is distracting me with his right hand with these features. What is he doing with his left hand? What am I missing?" I can understand why people are skeptical about stuff, but Valve wins with this. Like, this is a benefit to Valve, because if I'm deciding between picking up a game on my PlayStation or picking it up on my Steam Deck, and if I can buy it and then share it with my son on the Steam Deck super easily, then I'm going to buy it there. If I, same thing with the Nintendo Switch or the Xbox, this makes a lot of sense for Valve, because it incentivizes people to buy games on their platform. And I think that that's fantastic. Any thoughts on that? We'll start with Jimmy and then Rich.
No, I think you're just 100% right. My joke was going to be that the left hand is hiding the fact that they've delayed SteamOS 3 again to work on this feature. You know, like, I don't really see a downside, because the feature already existed. It just needed an update. And a lot of people were saying in the comments of the Verge tweet about their article that it's overdue. So, you know, just feels like righting a wrong in a little bit of a way. Like, Valve is classic at introducing features and then kind of letting them languish. So it's nice to see them actually go back and repair something that obviously needed it, because a lot of people use library sharing.
I think a lot of people wanted to use it, but it wasn't good enough.
That's it. Went from kind of below in this industry standard to above industry standard, and maybe if they let it linger again, it'll go back to sort of being at or below. But I think you guys nailed it. I think there's always reason to be skeptical. I think that Valve, you know, they are better in a way than the other companies, in that they don't have like shareholders and they don't have to worry about that side of things. But at the same time, like, I'm always going to be skeptical of any corporation, because who knows, one day they may have shareholders and things like that. So I think, I think it's reasonable to be skeptical, but I think this instance, like, this is a pretty good feature. The most skeptical or cynical you can be about this is that they're looking towards, you know, user acquisition. But they just surpassed 36 million. So whatever they're doing seems to be working with that 36 million online concurrent users.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me 3 weeks in a row?
Three weeks in a row. So 34 million, 2.5 weeks ago, then 35 million the following week, and now 36 million. They had not passed any of those peaks in over a year. I think a year ago was the last time that they did a million. They surpassed a million kind of point.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Okay. RP in chat points out something that is important. He says you can't family share GTA 5 because you can't family share games with third-party launchers. I didn't know about the third-party launchers. I just knew that some games could, what's the word I'm looking for? Some games could opt out, which is better than opt in. If it has a third-party launcher, which a lot of games do, that does get in the way. That's a wrinkle that I hadn't thought of.
Like Baldur's Gate 3 has that Larian.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, does it depend on the type of launcher?
I don't know.
Any?
Yeah, like Cyberpunk and The Witcher have one too.
Correct. Well, yeah, it does, but you don't have to actually log in to use it.
Right. You just hit play.
Yeah, you just hit play. So that one, it might not get in the way, but that's definitely something to think about. Because I don't know. I think that would be, that's another reason to dislike third-party launchers, which I'm not a fan of.
Add it to the list.
There was one thing that Valve took away with this update. I saw someone tweet about it on pretty recently. So you can no longer, this doesn't apply to me, you can no longer share across multiple countries. So, yeah, so right. If you try to add a family member that is not in the same country, it's not going to work.
Like Which sucks for those people. Like that does suck, because there are families where they are, you know, I got two daughters and a son. My daughters are adults. If they decide, you know what, we're going to move to New Zealand, I would be sad, but then they wouldn't be able to share my games. And so I would be like, that'll teach you.
There was,
all right, go ahead.
Last thing, there was a game, Berserk Boy, that I've been playing. Pretty good game. For some reason, that has family sharing disabled. It seems like it was just like unintentional. So I let the developer know, and I think they're changing it. So crossing fingers on that one.
Cool. Awesome. Very cool. We're going to talk about the games that we've been playing in just a second. But first, we want to talk about Playtron OS, which is a Linux-based system for gaming. I'm Steam Deck OS or Steam OS or nothing. I'm like, part of me has considered doing, I want to call it Balatro, but it's not Balatro. What's it called again? Bazite. Part of me is considered Bazite, but I'm probably just going to wait. But then I read about this and, ooh, this is so bad. You want to tackle this, Rich, and tell people about it?
Yeah. So first I'll give like the elevator pitch that was on The Verge. So it says, what if there were an Android of gaming and OS you could install on any capable hardware to get a controller-friendly PC experience? So like an Epic deck that could play Fortnite, or a 5G deck for cellular carriers, or a PlayStation deck for Sony's like PC ambitions. So it sounded pretty interesting, but yeah, then it was, so Liam from Gaming on Linux gave this update, right? Where they have apparently been, oh, this is still the plan. So yeah, I was gonna, do you have the other article too?
I don't know that I do. Yeah, is it okay. In the show notes?
It might not be an article. I think it's just a tweet. My bad.
Here, oh, well, at the top of this, he has an update about the stolen stuff.
My bad. I missed that. Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like they stole a video and used it as part of their pitch. So a video showcasing Witcher 3 playing on an ARM device. And, yeah, they used it without permission. They got hit with a copyright claim. So, yeah, they seem a little suspicious at this point, to say the least.
That's not good.
No. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I just said that's not good. I'm agreeing. That's bad.
Oh, okay. It is bad. People were saying in chat, they were like, talk about Playtron. I don't really have an opinion on it. I'm not going to use it. I will say, this picture of this device, is this a render?
It's horrible.
This thing looks awful.
It's just a render. Think about it like they just want to kind of create a framework for other companies to build Linux-based devices, which I think is a good idea. But yeah. I did have a, not quite a red flag, but a yellow flag, I'll say. Like, it's $10 million seems like a lot of money to kickstart this, right? Not because, I mean, OSs are expensive, right? So in a way, it's not that much money. But my concern is that Bazite and Chimera have already been doing so much work towards this, right? So I would like to see, yeah, for free, exactly. So my initial yellow flag was alleviated when I saw that there were Chimera devs on board with this, but now my yellow flags have turned into red flags because of stuff like this. And there are people that are, you know, at this point, they're just saying like, this is just like investor bait, right? So that is concerning at this point.
If anybody wants to make that device, please, dear God, don't. Because
just don't do it.
The D-pad, the touchpads on either side, instead of having a D-pad and face buttons, no thank you. And I'm somebody who loved the Steam controller, so no thanks. All right. Let's talk about the games that we've been playing. Jimmy, nobody else on the podcast has been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth except you and me. And I've been dying to hear like what other people think about it, because I am in love with this game. It is so good. What are your thoughts on it? Obviously, completely spoiler free.
Right. I'm still early because I was out of town this weekend and I was like, dang, can't bring my PS5. But I'm like deep into chapter two. I am just knocking out the open world stuff. Everything I've experienced so far is a step up from Remake, except for obviously the graphics. But like, I love this game. The combat advancement, so much better. The fact that side quests are tied to specific characters, you can advance the relationships. That's awesome. The voice acting was punched up a little bit. Like, I can't talk about like the difference. The Cloud has a different voice for a portion of the intro, and just like hearing the voice actor kind of like change to that was awesome. Same with Sephiroth. It was so sweet. I love the open world side objectives. The best ones for me are the combat trials, where like it gives you three objectives, and I love so much that you don't have to tackle all three objectives at the same time. You can just redo the battle, because if you start doing all the open world stuff, you kind of get way stronger than those enemies, so you're like killing them too fast to actually do all three of the objectives a lot of the time. Like being able to ride Chocobo, the soundtrack got a huge upgrade. Just some of the story moments in the intro hit harder than the vast majority of Remake for me. I saw that like no one's playing this game. It's like it sold 10,000 copies, I think, in its second week, compared to like 200 and something thousand in its first week in Japan. We don't have the US numbers, obviously, and those were just physical sales. But I don't know if it's open world fatigue or like the fact that it's a direct sequel and it's not called Remake anymore. I don't know, but like if you've been waiting for a PS5 game that takes advantage of the PlayStation 5, takes advantage of the DualSense, gives you a game you can really dig into and get a lot of enjoyment out of that doesn't really feel like it has a lot of filler despite having a lot to do, I like could not recommend any game over this one at this point.
Yeah, I'm having an absolute blast with it. I'm on chapter 7 or 8. I think chapter 7, close to the end of chapter 7. I'm 35 hours in. And I've gotten to like a beach zone, and like we're going around and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm not going to do any spoilers, so I won't talk about any of the quests. There are some things where, you know, in the open world, like you're in chapter two, Jimmy, and in the open world, it's clear that they've got a loop that they want you to do. All right, so it's like, go to this open world section, do a bunch of stuff. Okay. After you finish that stuff, we're going to funnel you towards like an objective. You accomplish that objective, get a bunch of story beats, and then bam, more open world stuff where you can go around and just kind of spend your time doing all of this different stuff. And the thing that I'm loving about it is that everything feels different. And especially like you talked about the combat trials. So in the game, you have the ability to pressure. You have the ability to pressure an enemy, stagger an enemy, and then you can do like crazy damage to him, right? So you might have an enemy that's weak against ice or something. So you focus on ice attacks in order to pressure that enemy. So one of the objectives might be that you have to pressure an enemy, stagger an enemy, and then kill everything within a certain amount of time. And sometimes that is really hard to do all three things at once. So I'm with you. I was very excited to see that they didn't erase my progress when I went back to try a second time.
I just like that this game it does its best to not get in your way of having fun. Like everything is boiled down to just be quick. Not necessarily easy a lot of the time, but there's always like, it's very clear about what your objective is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to do mini game wise. And then have you been playing all the Queen's Blood side quests?
I have. I will say that I was listening to a spoiler free podcast, and they were talking about Queen's Blood having like a story quest line throughout it that I
heard
not,
that too.
Like, because I'm not there yet, so I didn't realize that. That's exciting to me. Queen's Blood is awesome. needs to be on my phone. I need to be able to take that and play it wherever I am instead of just having it trapped on my PlayStation.
I'm not a card game guy at all. And it's so good. It's simple. But yeah,
they said, all right, this small team from the Rebirth team, you spend a year and make this card game. They spent a year on it. Awesome. What were you going to say, Rich?
I think that should be standard from now on. Any Final Fantasy minigame should have a mobile version from now on. Mm-hmm. Like that
should be. You could do a collection. Like,
yes, that would be amazing.
It all would be fun. And they kind of did that, right? Like, they released the G-Bike segments from, the original in Japan as a mobile game. And it was like, there was also a snowboarding game on PS1 that was just the snowboarding section. They've already kind of like played around with it. I bet they're looking at Gwent, where everyone kind of gassed up Gwent for a long time and then they released it as a game and no one played it. But this is so much simpler than Gwent. Like, it would be so good on a phone. I'm always looking for new mobile games because that's what I do on the treadmill at the gym. This game would just eat that 30 minutes up so quick. I'm not like the right person to review it technically, just because I don't love card games that much. But this one, when I see that little marker, I forget the story, forget anything I'm doing. I'm playing that person in Queen's Blood because it gets
better, Jimmy. Like the depth to the gameplay for Queen's Blood gets deeper as you go further into the game because you get cards that behave in different ways.
That's awesome. Yeah, right
now they're all number based. One thing I will say is it needs some balance. Like, it's fine because it's a single player game and I'm playing against NPCs, so who cares? But there's some really, really powerful cards that would just have to be gone before they release this as something that I could play against other people.
I have, just on the sales thing, I have been listening to the past few podcasts and I heard like Kerry and Russ, right? Both talk about how just not having it on PC probably affected sales too. And I think that could be a factor. But if I think about what kept me from buying this day one, it was what Jimmy said, sequel, right? I still haven't finished Remake. I can. So now I'm going to go finish Remake when I have the time. But if I had already finished it, like, it would have been a no-brainer to pick up Rebirth for me. But I just am not there. So I think it's, you know, there are different reasons for different people, but I think the fact that this seems really like you have to be an FF7 fan for this game and that'll get you really going. I think that's a factor here.
Beating Remake will make you an FF7 fan. I never played the original when I was a kid. I played Crisis Core and watched Advent Children. Yeah. And then, you know, the first half of Remake is pretty rough. We went in depth about it on the Summon Side podcast. I was just on that like 2 weeks ago. When you hit the midway point, there's 18 chapters. Literally when you hit chapter 9, it's just like it goes from, you know, like, what are we doing here? What's the motivations? Who's the villain? What's really going on? To just like everything just locks into place. All that setup kind of takes in. And then I went from playing this game in between stuff, kind of picking it up, putting it down to like, I played this game for like 3 nights straight, ended up finishing it at 2 a.m. because the story just picks up that much. And then it went from this thing that I thought was cool to something that I'm like full on invested in the world now. And I understand why they're doing so much with it. Yeah. But you know what's surprising? Whenever you see a situation like this, when, you know, there's first game sells really well, second game comes out, doesn't sell as well. You think like, oh, I'll go check PSN profiles, see what the trophy completion is on the first game. Mm-hmm. I was assuming that Remake would not have a lot of completion, but 55 to 60%, I think, is how many people got the story completion trophy in Remake. Wow. So
no, that's a lot. Kind of
surprising. Like, even seeing that metric was surprising.
Yeah, but for that game, there was a lot of stuff that you had to tread through. Like the side quests. The side quests in Remake, in my opinion, were just not fun. And so bad. Especially very early on. The early on stuff was just not fun. And people got through that to finish the story. And I remember I was talking to a friend at work, and he said, what just happened? He didn't realize that it was 3 games. He did not understand that it was going to be 3 games. And a lot of people, they get there to the end and they're like, what the hell is this? Why? Where's the rest of the game? Just Midgar? Right. Screw you. Yeah. And I can understand why people might be hesitant to pick up the next one. Plus, there's way less PS5s out there. I mean, we talked about that on the show last week or the week before. But what was that?
Yeah. I think it's like a third amount of PS5s out there.
Yeah.
Compared to how many PS4s there were. I don't know. I think this game will probably have a long tail. There's probably a big group of people waiting for Dragon's Dogma 2. So once that's out, once people realize that game is probably not their cup of tea, if you're just going in for like an open world game, I think a lot of people are going to be like really put off by some of the systems in Dragon's Dogma. I think that's when you'll kind of see it sort of like rip back. We also don't know American or European sales. So.
That's true.
Or digital sales in Japan. So it could have been one of those games that was just heavily digital versus physical. Even though they marketed it on two discs in the first trailer, it was like Final Fantasy VII Rebirth on two discs.
That's so funny.
We might as well use this. We're talking about X number of PS4s, X number of PS5s. Might as well talk about the PS4 stats that got leaked. I'm going to use big old air quotes here for the audio listeners. They got leaked. So system memory for a standard PS5, it says, or system memory, standard PS5 is 448 gigabytes per second, or 14 giga transfers per second. PS5 Pro has 18 giga transfers per second. I don't know what that means. Yeah, sure.
Rich is like, I know.
Okay. Somebody knows, and they're gonna tell us in the comments, and we appreciate you. CPU identical to the PS5, but the PS5 Pro has a higher frequency, so it's gonna be at higher gigahertz. Audio runs at a higher clock speed. GPU renders 45% faster than PS5 with better ray tracing stuff, 33.5 teraflops. The thing that I find the most interesting is PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution Upscaling. Basically, their copy of FSR, DLSS, Intel XeSS, all that stuff that they're doing. So, first off, first question. Does this make sense to you guys? Do you think that this is even close to real? Jimmy, you run PS Ready.
I was going to let Rich go first because I've talked about it enough. I want to hear what Rich has to say.
All right.
Well, so here's the thing. I was sick as a dog this weekend. So I saw some tweets and I'm like, what is going on? Because the first tweet I saw was that the source was Moore's Law is Dead. And so I kind of just shelved it, right? Like, I'll look at this when I'm not so sick. But like, what is the source for this leak? That was my first question.
Insider Gaming is Tom Henderson, and this dude is like,
oh, it's Tom. If it's Tom, it's Bible. Yeah,
and I've been covering this for a long time. He's been reporting basically all of this just in a more like brief way. So it just confirmed a lot of what we've been hearing, like the 40% faster GPU, 10% overclock on the CPU. So I think this is legit. They also gave examples of games, like two examples where one was running on the PS5. It was running at like the way that I forget. I don't want to say it wrong. It's in a different article. I don't have the link right now. Mm-hmm. Essentially, they want to use this console to merge fidelity and performance mode. So you'd get the graphics of fidelity mode with the performance of performance mode. And then I saw in the Digital Foundry video that the PSSR right now has the capability to upscale from 1080p to 4K, and that it's going to be really easy for devs to backpatch games. So like the stuff that's coming out before the PS5 Pro that's already out, like they'll be able to put out patches that allow it to take advantage of PSSR. So theoretically, like back when the PS4 Pro came out, every game will see some sort of improvement unless it's Bloodborne.
That sounds legit. My feeling for me is that this only incentivizes people, I think, that don't already have a PS5, and also, of course, the super fans, right? Like, but it's not like, it doesn't feel like a must update, which I think is fine.
PS4 Pro, they never, they ever even release numbers on PS4 Pro sales.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, like if I didn't have a PS5, I'd be looking at this for sure. I like that they're focusing on, I saw some of the analysis and it looks like the CPU is still bottleneck, but you know, with what they're actually focusing on, like what you said, on the actual super resolution, the upscaling, right? And merging, like you said, fidelity and performance. I think that's really all you need, right? Like you want to carry over as much of the library without developers having to do extra work as possible.
Yeah. And the PS4 Pro mode back in the day was like magic. It was so cool how you could play, you know, like older games from the PS4 generation just better. And it was,
yeah,
you just had to go into the settings on your PS4 Pro and turn on PS4 Pro mode and it would just work. And then they kind of advanced that with the PS5 with those patches that Last of Us Part 2 got, Ghost of Tsushima, God of War, and they were always just really good patches. So Sony's always been cool about this. PSSR, I think, is really exciting just because they have the ability to focus on one piece of hardware versus, you know, DLSS. Obviously, DLSS has a smaller subset of cards because they segment it by generation, and then you're only with NVIDIA cards, or FSR, right, which is on everything. And on console, like on PS5, FSR is largely pretty bad, I would say. Like when you play Jedi Survivor, they've improved it, but like you can see the like the shimmering around the hair, the actual hair fibers are all blocky. As you get farther out into the draw distance, it like degrades a lot. I'm assuming that's what they're using in Rebirth, which looks pretty bad also, in 60 FPS mode.
Yeah, in performance mode, it looks like it's a blur fest. Yeah. I don't wear my glasses when I'm playing that game.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm playing that on my TV, like, you know, 5 feet away, because it actually looks pretty good that way. But if I was playing here on my monitor, I'd be like, what the hell is going on with this? Yeah. Like, is my monitor running at like 720p or something? But yeah, I think you're right that this is for the hardcore user, which I am. So I'm stoked for this just because, you know, I was kind of gravitating more towards PS5 for a while because of all the stuttering and like, you know, you buy a PC game on day one, you're just an idiot at this point. And then now I'm gravitating back towards PC because they've kind of ironed out a lot of the issues, and now I'm like, oh, if I had a PS5 Pro, I could play on my TV more and know that I'm not missing out if by not playing it on PC, you know. So I'm excited. I hope it comes in black. That's my one wish, is just out the gate, black console, black DualSense Pro that you can upgrade to.
They like, need to. They need.
It needs to be a friggin' rectangle. Just make a Sony. Make a rectangle, Sony.
That'd be nice.
You look at the PS2 to the PS2 Slim, and it's incredible how much they're able to shrink that thing. And, you know, even PS3 to PS3 Slim and PS4 to PS4 Slim, like those are, you know, more than marginal decreases in size. But like you put the PS5 Slim next to the PS5, it's like, you didn't need to release this. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, pretty much. What they need to do if they really want to sell some extra units is they've been talking, like, there have been the rumors about the Bloodborne remake or whatever for so long. Yeah. Like, I'm convinced they're working on it. So please do that. If you do that.
Over on Sacred Symbols, Colin, he never leaks anything unless he's got, like, you know, a billion sources. And I think he's got, like, a close to, like, high 90% success record. And he said it, like, that he had it on good authority that they were going to release a Bloodborne port on the PS5. Wow. And it just disappeared into thin air. Now the rumor's PS6. It's like, why are we even talking about the PS6? Right. They're barely releasing PS5 games at this point.
Right.
But yeah, I'm fine with these mid-gen upgrades. They give me an opportunity to make a video. They give me an opportunity to like get momentary satisfaction blowing $600. And we know that the PS5 is not getting a price drop because the parts are still as expensive around as they were when it came out. So I fully expect this thing to be $600, but like, I don't care. I like the PS5 interface. I like playing games on my TV, and we know that they are working on some sort of app, and I just like have all of my fingers and toes crossed that it incorporates some sort of cross save, because like that's the only thing that could get me to buy games on a different launcher than Steam, is if I can buy them on one thing, play them on my PS5 and play them on my PC.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Well, you talked about a price drop in the, you know, PlayStation 5 Pro not getting a price drop. Do you think that if the PS5 Pro comes out, that the PS5 and the PS5 Slim, I find it hard to Do you think that those get a price drop for those part for the current Hiroki whatever's?
The man himself, the new interim CEO, was saying that they're not doing a price drop at all. So I'm sure you'll still see these random sales like the one that's going on right now where you can get it was supposed to be just the digital model with Spider-Man 2 for $400 because they raised so you would basically get the digital edition console for the price that it was before they released the Slim, which like is stupid. But now they dropped the price of the disc drive model with Spider-Man 2 to $400. So there's random sales that go on, but I don't think we're ever going to see a permanent price drop for this console until right around the time of the PS6, like when they're ready to announce it. Because he was saying, and he did this huge investor call, but he was like, they expected the price part prices to fall as time went on, like it does in every other generation, but it just didn't. So
yeah.
They want to make it. They're really aggressive about making a profit on the PS5 this gen.
Well, you know, that's not getting a price drop. But will the PSVR 2 get a price drop? Because they just stopped production on the PSVR 2. Listen, I bought a PSVR 2. I put it on my stupid head. I thought, this is amazing. It's so good. It is. And then there were no games to play on this thing. I'm super happy that Sony has said, hey, we're working on PC support. Like, thank God.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like they're doing that because ain't nobody buying this thing for $549. Do you see it getting a price drop?
Dude, I just did it. This was my video that hopefully went up today. I was like, yeah, they need to do a price drop. The thing costs more than a PlayStation 5. Like, that's crazy. And if you wanted to get it with Horizon Call of the Mid,
which it was like $600. That game's fun.
It's fun. I'm just like, I'm a Horizon Universe mid-fester. I don't know. $600. Yeah, right. Like, no one's showing up for that. And the fact that it doesn't have backwards compatibility with PSVR 1, so you got to keep that piece of shit around. Like,
that hurts so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand why they did it. It was a different tech.
Right.
Because like it was inside out. Right.
And you needed the camera and the weird middle box that you plugged into the PS4. Like, you needed all that hardware. So many wires. And they've done a bad job at getting both porting their own games that they made first party wise for the PSVR, and they've done a bad job getting third party developers to, you know, upgrade their games to
get an Astrobot game out there, you know, like make some first party PSVR 2 games and like just get a bunch of them out there so I'll have something to play. But right now thing sits under my desk.
For the rest of this podcast, we should just talk about how underutilized the Astrobot property is. Cause
oh my God,
it's crazy. I could talk about that for hours.
It's so like the game on the PS5 is amazing. The way that it uses the controller, I would say it's very similar to the experience of playing, I want to say Portal, but that's not it. What Aperture Desk Job.
Oh, yeah,
it's very similar to playing Aperture Desktop on the Steam Deck. And it's a cute little mascot. And it would sell a bunch if they made them. And I don't know.
I enjoyed the PSVR 1 game, the Astrobot Rescue Mission. That was also really, really good.
Yeah, and it's just crazy because like I've used the Quest 3. I have a Quest 2. They're uncomfortable after a while when they're on your head. The PSVR, because everything is handled by the PS5, it's so light on your head and it's soft on your eyes. And their foveated rendering system they have where I thought this wasn't going to work right, where it only renders what you're looking at. You never notice anything being a little bit softer on your like peripheral vision. Like it takes that into account. The stuff they're able to do with it is just so cool. It's just, once again, when Sony doesn't immediately have a hit, they just divert all resources away from it and then just cross their fingers, I guess, that it takes off. I know that the Vita, the big reason they really abandoned that thing was because it was totally cracked open like in 2016, but you can't really, there's nothing to crack open with the PSVR 2. Hopefully they pull a Valve and just like move all the people that are working on the PSVR 2 over to this handheld, because I want a handheld from Sony more than I want support for PSVR 2, I think, at this point.
That's fair.
I mean, that's fair. I find it so weird that they would, that the idea that they would put out a handheld right after shipping the Portal.
Yeah, right.
You know, like, then why even have made the Portal? The Portal,
I know.
Like, the, I understand why the Portal exists. I bought one. Mine was broken. I sent it back and I said, ah, screw it. I didn't buy a new one. But I can understand why you would sell the Portal, but why would you sell the Portal and then turn around afterwards and then sell a handheld that actually plays games? I think that that's just very, like, that's bad planning.
Does, like, who would buy both? Does 2 to 3 years count as right afterwards? Like, are we including that?
Yeah. Like, that's when the handheld's supposed to come out, if it's real.
Yeah.
And we know the Portal's selling well, but we don't know how long its tail's going to be, or if that was like a flash in the pan where they just,
I meant to bring that up. Yeah. I meant to bring that up because didn't they say the PSVR 2 was selling well, like, a few months
ago? Well, it's sold out.
Right, exactly. But that's the same phrasing that they use for the Portal. So, like, do you think we'll see an article like this 6 months from now, 8 months from now about the Portal?
Well, there's the good thing about the Portal for them is there's nothing to really update on it. You know, it does one thing. It has, like, I think 8 gigs of storage. So there's no future for it to get more features, I don't think. Like, but yeah, the specific words they used were like, not necessarily that it's selling well. It was just that it was selling better than they thought it would, too. So, like, they had to kind of, like,
even we can't decide why we would have this thing.
Yeah. But I get, it's just weird because you look at the, I just looked at that Wikipedia list of the best selling consoles. I mean, it's dominated. The top 10 slots are mostly handheld. So it's like, we're getting this cool point where you could actually play the, you don't have to buy two separate games, right? Like, the Nintendo Switch mastered that. Like, Sony, for some reason, didn't read the room and see that they could kind of do the same thing. But I hope.
I think it just takes time. I think PS6, like, that could be the thing.
Yeah. I'm always for more hardware because I'm fighting back against the Twitter people who are like, consoles are going away. There's never going to, we're all going to be playing on PC in like 5 years. So I hate that. I hate thinking about it.
Just the only way that ever happens is if there's a, like, if there is a one default box that you can buy that everybody has, that, then all the devs can focus on that one thing. Because as soon as, you know, Jimmy tells me how great this game is and I go out and buy it on PC and my PC is a potato and I load it up, I'm like, I can't, it doesn't even run. Yeah. What are you talking about? There's too many people out there that don't understand that different computers have different specs.
Like, and they're expensive. Like, if you want to get PS5 level performance, I mean, you're in at least a grand. Like, and that's, I think, a low estimate. Yeah. I saw Linus did his video. I did a video kind of talking about this. I don't know when it's going to come out. It's like a banked video. But, like, Linus did his video where he was able to beat the PS5 for $476. He was able to do it using an Intel card, which I, you know, wouldn't recommend to most people. He was able to do it buying entirely used parts and sourcing a free case. So, like, he had to really penny pinch to get to that $500-ish range. And now the PS5 is selling for $400 with a game. So, you know, I think we got to be realistic here and say, like, if you're talking about PCs replacing consoles, like, price has got to drop a lot.
Yeah, it would literally only be Valve, right? That could make it.
Which would be sweet.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. They're the only ones that could make a set-top box that would perform at that level.
Are you listening, Gabe? Are you listening? We want... Listen, I'm going to click on a thing. Give it to us. That's all we want, man. Just give us a Valve console, and we'll all be happy. Would you be happy, Jimmy? Am I looking the wrong way? Would you be happy, Jimmy?
Now you're looking the right way. Yes. I'd be stoked. We were talking about it in the Discord the other night. I was never in on the idea of the Steam Machine back when it first came out, but now with save transferring, you know, your library being shared, Steam OS being as great as it is, that'd be awesome. I have so many games on Steam. It'd just be great to be able to play them on a TV without extending an HDMI cord, you know, using my 9-foot DualSense cable, making sure the screen turns off when a game launches, like X, Y, and Z, like eliminate all the bloat from the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. By the way, that's cool that Linus did that video. I didn't know that. I'll have to go take a look. I just wanted to shout out a channel called Oz Talks Hardware, Oz Talks HW. His whole channel is like gaming on a budget, where he's penny pinching. Cool. And he did a $500 PS5 killer 3 months ago. So good channel just in general. But
yeah. Wait, what's can you say it again so I can look it up and save it for later?
Oz Talks HW.
Okay, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I love that. I think it's cool when people do that. Like, that's just fun, because getting more people in on PC gaming is great.
Agreed.
It is. Let's move on. I want to talk really quickly about Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection. First off,
yikes.
Bad. Like, so I got a review copy. I loaded it up. I played the single player because nobody was, like, there was nobody to play with, right? It was before launch. I played a little bit of the single player and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I can see myself dumping some hours into this. A fun, nostalgic trip. And then launch day came and they had three servers for 10,000 people or whatever. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is this, allegedly, I'm saying so that I don't get sued. Allegedly, Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection has used a modder's work without giving them credit. It says, as reported by IGN, players noticed a mod created by a modder, I.M. Shaman. It was reportedly featured in the game, despite the developer clarifying last month that it did not include any code or content that was taken from uncredited sources. So I guess it was in like some video of the game. And people are like, hey, that belongs to so-and-so. And they were like, oh, you know, we were capturing placeholder footage and we left it in by accident. That wasn't real. But then it's in the game. This mod apparently is in the game. And they just straight up stole it. Not only is the game broken and you can't play it. And hey, all the times that people have been like, well, you can't trust these people who are getting review copies. I got a review copy. I'm telling you, it's bad. Okay, so not only is the game broken, you can't play it. Maybe someday they can fix that. I hope that they can, because when I was playing single player, I was having fun. But then if they allegedly just stole this person's mod work and put it in their game, that is not cool. What do you think about that, Rich?
So I have to comment on this, and then I got to bounce because I got to go pick up my kids. But it's interesting because this is the same publisher that published Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered. Mm-hmm. And the developer of Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered, I believe it's X Proger. You can look him up on Twitter. X Proger is the developer of, I forget the name. OpenLara is an engine, right, that recreates the Tomb Raider games. So for that game, they went and found the guy and recruited him to make this game.
That's the way you do it.
That's the way you do it. So what happened with Star Wars Battlefront? Why didn't you go and get the guy and have him do it? Like, pay him the right amount of money, get him a team like they did with Tomb Raider. So it's super disappointing, because Tomb Raider, excellent remaster. And, you know, they did it right. So I'm disappointed that they didn't do it right for this one.
Yeah, this me studio, too.
I hope with all the people leaving this studio, we get like a history of it or something, because
no clip.
The fall from grace with them is insane. Like, you know, the remastering, they started out really good with their remasters. Then KOTOR 2 came to the Switch, had a game-breaking bug at the end of the game, took them months to fix it. They were working on the remake of KOTOR, and then something happened. Like, there was a lot of stuff that came out about like internal struggle, blah blah blah, so they got removed from that. It got handed to Saber. Now this, it's just like this studio is like falling apart, it seems like, in a bad way.
Well, speaking of falling, like, oh, go ahead.
Oh, they had every opportunity to succeed, right? Like,
yeah,
just weird moves all around.
Well, speaking of weird moves, Rich has to weird move his way out of the show.
Segue.
Thank you. I've been trying. Let's just wrap up the show, because I think we've been talking for a while, and I think it's a good ending point. Rich, you had a video that came out today. What was that video all about, my friend?
Yeah, so I talked about the Steam families. It's awesome. I also talked about the Steam lawsuit, the Valve lawsuit, Wolfire versus Valve. Someone mentioned in my comments that Wolfire actually founded Humble, and I forgot about that detail. So yeah, that's a good, that might be where they're getting their funding. But it's an interesting lawsuit where they're kind of alleging that Valve has a monopoly and, you know, well, really that they're, that they have anti-competitive practice and they're price fixing.
Gotcha. Okay. Speaking of Humble Bundle, the Steam families thing has made Humble Bundle so much more valuable. If you do not know what Humble Bundle is, subscribe to Humble Choice. I will leave a link down below in the show notes. Subscribe to Humble Choice. You get a bunch of games every month, and now you can share them with your family. Jimmy, you had a video come out today. What was that video?
I don't know.
He doesn't remember.
I had like three banked. So it's a PlayStation News video. And then okay. I've got a deck ready that I finished today. That'll be about the Steam family sharing and the ROG Ally price drop. And I had a lot of fun talking about the ROG Ally.
Awesome. So huge thank you to everybody who came and hung out with us. It was over 500 people, and we haven't done a live show in a long time. I appreciate you guys hanging out with us. You're awesome. Stay rad, everybody. From the Nerd Nest, I'm Bill. Bye-bye, everybody.
See ya. Embracer Group owned.